it and jotted some things down.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Okay. And then we don't have to sort of like answer every single question, obviously.
Sure.
So I guess we'll start off with the kind of the context questions, like when you started working at the center, who's in charge. And then you talked a little bit there at the pre-recording about like where you worked on campus, but
sure. Yeah. Well, do you know how long I worked at the Writing Center? Do you have that information?
Oh, no? You said 8 years, right?
Yeah, I was there for, yeah, I was going to say, I went through, I think, 5 different leadership changes. There were a lot of different, the leadership team was very different. But I started in fall of 2000, as a graduate writing consultant. I believe that the director at the time was Patty Stock and the associate director was Janet Swenson. I think pretty soon after that, I mean, I know the people in charge were Patty and Janet. At some point, not long after that, they went to co-directorship of the Writing Center. And I don't remember if, I'm pretty sure that Patty was still the director when I started. But again, this was 21 years ago. So I'm not entirely sure. But it was Patty Stock and Janet Swenson. And I was hired on as, I was technically a graduate writing consultant, but I was Janet's assistant for a little while there. Helping with outreach. And then I left in, I think, May of 2008. And when I left, I was the assistant director and had been for 2 years, but assistant, not associate. I did not have my degree. In between then, and I don't know when these things happened, but so it was Patty and Janet. They were co-directors. Then Patty left and Janet brought in Dave Sheridan as associate director. And then Janet and Dave were co-directors. And then Janet became a dean and Dave was the director. And I was the assistant director because at that point I'd been there for 6 years and I had the institutional memory. They hired me on as staff. And then Dave went to the residential college and they hired in Trixie, who I'm sure you know.
Yes, yes.
Yes. And I was her assistant director for a while until Diana Baldwin was hired in a permanent position. Assistant director is a temporary position, basically. It's not intended to be permanent. And Diana Baldwin was hired in as associate director. And that was the point that I left. So that was when I was there, I did just about everything. I was never an undergraduate, so I can't claim that. But over the course of that 8 years, I, like I said, I was Janet's assistant. I helped with outreach, particularly with the Red Cedar Writing Project, and also management of the Writing Center. I was supervisor of the consulting that was happening. I did the scheduling for the main center and all the satellites. I also consulted. I worked with graduate writing groups. I did presentations. Trying to think, I managed a couple of the satellites. It was in charge of, advertising and running them and like actually being on site and running those, particularly SAS, Student Athlete Support Services. Trying to think of, I think I wrote this down somewhere, what all the things I did. That was the main thing. Oh, and I taught English 391, which was the, I forget what it was called when I started teaching it. But I changed the name to Writing Centers and Writing Center Theory eventually. But that was something else that I took over, I think probably in about 2004. It had been taught by Janet Swenson. We co-taught it for a semester and then I took over and taught it every spring, I believe, until I left.
And that's the undergraduate, like the required course for undergraduates.
Yeah, it was the training course. I don't know what it's called now. It's probably under a different heading. But yeah, it was the, this is what you're going to be doing here. And also here's a decent theoretical underpinning of what it means to work with writers in this particular way.
Yeah. Awesome. Yeah. I think it's now it's 395 or something like that. I'm not an undergraduate either, so I didn't take it.
But. Yeah, it was like special topics in writing. It was one of the standing alternatives that was a special topics course. But yeah, no, it was a fun class. I enjoyed that a lot.
Yeah, yeah. No, I've definitely heard great things about from the undergraduate consultants about sort of how just how transformative it was. And like we do sort of like weekly bi-weekly now, I guess, sort of speakers will come in and nice. And give talks. And yeah. It's been, which I guess would be something really difficult to do in non-COVID season. And mm-hmm. We've had these people come in every sort of other week and like speak about disability access and
that's awesome.
And all these other kinds of things that like I'd never really thought of, and it's been sort of like pedagogically transformative for me, because like as a TA at MSU, they like shove you in a room for like 8 hours and tell you not to do anything illegal. And
yeah, that's don't all date the teacher your students. You that's get. Yeah, yeah. Right. I remember that orientation. It's like mm-hmm. don't date the undergrads. Thanks. Yeah. Wasn't planning to. Gross. Yeah, okay.
Wasn't planning to.
Yeah.
And so as a TA, I mean, I work as a TA as well, and it's been really sort of, it's been really awesome, just like stuff that I never even thought of in the classroom. So,
yeah. Well, this is one of the things that I used to, when I would when I had to staff the receptionist desk and like answer calls and make appointments for people, people would always request working with a grad student. And I would always, almost always, like, and they'd reject, like, if there wasn't a grad student available, because they thought the grad student was going to be the better consultant. Mm. And I would always say, it was like, you understand, undergrads who work here went through a class. They took an entire semester understanding mm-hmm. what this practice is. Grad students had a summer orientation and probably a bachelor's, right? Like right. The undergraduates in terms of their work here are better prepared. At this yeah. point, like, and people, you know, sometimes they would believe me, and then they would have a session with an undergrad, be like, oh yeah, this was awesome. Like, I know this, like, I mm-hmm. I came here as a grad student. I, you know, but yeah, no, it was, yeah, it's a great class. It's also just a great, I can't speak to the community now in terms of the community, the time, you know, overall, like, you know, kind of the average with a fairly small standard deviation was really positive. It was a really nice place to work. The people who didn't fit into that community didn't stay. Mm-hmm. Like they found somewhere else they wanted to work. So it was, yeah, no, it was, mm-hmm. yeah. It was nice to find that.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's one of the things that I really love about working here is like, there is actually a really great community, and like grad school can be so cutthroat, you know?
Yeah.
And it's, I feel like it's just getting worse and worse as like, you know, the job market has ceased to be a market at all, because there's nothing available.
Right. Right.
So
yeah. Yeah, no, for sure. Mm-hmm. Supportive was one thing. It definitely always was.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I guess we can sort of, so you talked about a lot of the kind of services that you worked with, which is great. Mm-hmm. So when you think of the history of the Writing Center, is there any sort of major things that come to mind, and sort of, and how do you fit into that kind of historical trajectory?
I don't know. That was the one question in the list that you gave me that I didn't have a good answer. When I think of the Writing Center's history, I don't think I have a good answer to that. I don't really okay. have. I mean, I was there, you know, I was there for milestones, I think, like when we stopped, like we moved from doing everything on paper to doing a lot of things digitally. That was a big thing. But in terms of like historical impact, I don't know. I mean, most of the things that I tried to get, and I think I did get the Student Athlete Support Services satellite back on track and doing good work, but I don't think it exists anymore. So, sure. You know, it like things like that, like the I can't think of, yeah, I don't, I mean, I think probably the, in terms of my role in that history, the biggest contribution I had was I trained several years worth of mm-hmm. undergraduate mm-hmm. writing consultants. Mm-hmm. And many of whom I believe were doing, I mean, I can't speak to all of them. I didn't observe all of them, but they were all really good at their jobs. Like I think they did fantastic yeah. work. So I have a lot of pride in that. Yeah, so, I don't, so I don't, I think that's, yeah.
You mentioned milestones. Like, I mean, the transition from paper to digital is a big milestone, obviously. Were there any other sort of major milestones that you observed while you were there?
I mean, we stopped doing, when we started doing like reflections online, that was, stopped filing all those. I'm trying to think of what else we, I mean, that we did some asynchronous sessions. We did some remote sessions. And I feel like that was something that we struggled with offering, whether or not we were going to do that, and thinking about just like in terms of our approach, like pedagogically, and in terms of our approach to our work, were we okay with asynchronous sessions? Were we okay with the writer not being physically in the space with us? I don't know. We were tiptoeing into that a lot. I'm trying to think of, I mean, I think the library satellite, I think it's, I don't remember when it started. I don't remember if it was going when I started there, but it came into its own a little bit more while I was there, which was nice. The Civil and Environmental Engineering Writing Center satellite was born and died while I was there, because that was basically the baby of one particular undergraduate who spearheaded that and made it happen. And then when he graduated, it ended. I'm trying to think of other things. I mean, there was the Business Communication Center satellite that I don't know if it exists anymore, but that definitely started up while I was there. So there, and I think we piloted having some locations, some temporary locations in dorms during finals week and stuff. So there were things like that, trying to expand services, reach more people. Yeah, I'm trying to think of other milestones. I'm sure. Yeah, no, I can't think of anything else right now. If something comes up, I'll
yeah,
bring it
sure.
up.
For sure. Yeah. Yeah. So maybe you want to talk a little bit about your own growth at the Writing Center, like how you changed, how the world changed around you, and how the Writing Center might have helped you process all that.
Wow. Well, I definitely made lifelong friendships there. My two closest friends, who I still work with, actually, we all work in the same department at U of M. I met at the Writing Center. One was a grad student and one was an undergrad, and then became a grad student and at employee at the Writing Center. So definitely the Writing Center gave me that, hired good people and I got some friends out of that, and you know, other friends too. Professionally, I would not be able to pinpoint a particular moment or experience that did this, but I definitely left there with a specific approach to teaching writing and working with writers that, I mean, just the that is not consistent in people that like that I encounter, like the people that other people in my department and my current department. And I know that, like, I've talked to my friends who are also Writing Center alums, and we just like, yeah, it's a Writing Center thing. If you come out of a Writing Center, you have this. This is a non-scientific, you know, very small sample size, but you know, we think that we all have a focus in teaching writing on audience. And in and kind of a preference for working with individual writers and with this kind of a much less directive, let's figure out your way of approaching the situation and answering this question, rather than me telling you this is the right way. Yeah. And that is something that other people who teach some of the same classes that I have taught, they'll come in and say, okay, this is the right way to write a memo. This is the right way to write a lab report. This is the right, and you know, we'll say, and I'll go in and be like, ah, I wish it were that easy, but mm-hmm. who are you writing to? What do they expect? Mm-hmm. And that definitely comes from working with students in classes who had a different faculty member who was grading them. And my mm-hmm. just awareness that, okay, this person in first year writing expects this. This person teaching first year writing expects this. They say they're teaching the same thing, right. but they're not articulating. You need to figure out what your audience expects, because in that, you know, what is right is what the audience wants in this moment, in this context.
Right.
And so mm-hmm. I took that out of definitely my Writing Center work. And it's, I mean, I think I am a better writing teacher for it. I also have the ability to read writing that is outside of my area of expertise, highly technical, highly scientific. I mean, I work with engineering students now, and they're writing about engineering work that I could not go into a lab and reproduce, but I can tell them whether or not what they're writing makes sense. Mm-hmm. And so it's partly experience in reading the technical and scientific and, you know, just non my area of expertise work from the Writing Center, and learning a lot from that, just like kind of learning mm-hmm. the, you know, like shallow depth of a lot of different topics, and then being able to take that and extrapolate. But also it's figuring out what the logic of an argument, even if you don't understand the subject, mm-hmm. is, and being Definitely. Able to respond to that logic. And that's an incredibly useful skill. I took that I was a scientific editor for a while. Directly after I left the Writing Center, I worked for the government for a few years and as a scientific editor. And that was what I was doing there. It's like, I don't understand the work that they are doing in terms of, like, you know, survey methodology writ large. Like, I don't understand, you know, like, that's not my area, but I can tell you whether or not it makes sense.
Right.
Because whether or not it makes sense is my area. And working in the Writing Center for that long definitely gave me that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've actually, you know, we were talking earlier about how, like, you know, you get a sort of sense of all the things that you don't know, like, from the Writing Center. And that's mm-hmm. definitely something that I've realized, like, wow, there's so much stuff that I don't know. And you know, the Writing Center has definitely contributed to that. I mean, you work with everybody, you know.
No, and well, I feel like that was one of the good indicators. It was never an official indicator, but I felt like that was a good indicator of who was going to be happy as a consultant, is the people who were just genuinely interested in all of the topics that were coming to them. Mm-hmm. And it, you know, people who, there were some people who would come and they would be like, I only want to work with students who are writing about this thing. I was like, that's not the right attitude. Like, I don't think you're going to be happy, because you're going to try to force them all into writing that one thing the way you expect it to be written.
Yeah.
And if you could be interested in all the stories that people are telling you, if you can be interested in all the subjects they're writing about, it's going to be a much more satisfying experience and more valuable mm-hmm. for you.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So do you have a favorite story of yours from the Writing Center?
Oh, wow. I don't think I have a good story. I thought when I saw that question in the list, I had two things popped into mind, one of them is not a story, but or not one particular point in time, but I think it was during finals week. We would always rent a popcorn popper, do they still do that?
You wouldn't know.
Yeah. Sorry. Yes. During COVID, are they having lonely popcorn by themselves? We would get on a cart, like on one of those gray hard plastic carts, but it would be like a popcorn machine that's like this big, you know, with the hot oil and the thing that spins around. And then you have like a big glass box full of popcorn. Mm-hmm. And we would open the doors and prop them open, and we would start popping popcorn, and people would like come from that would be on like the first floor of Bessie, and they would wander up because they would follow the smell of fresh pop popcorn. That was a lot of fun. I always looked forward to being able to do that every year, because I was like, I want to do it. I want to open up. I want to put the popcorn in. I want to stir it up. That was super fun, and definitely got burned. Like, definitely got hot oil burns because we weren't as careful as we should have been. But that was, I remember that is a fond memory that I have. The only other story I could think of, and I'm sure I was there for 8 years. There are a million things. I just can't think of anything. I know there was one time we really wanted to paint one of the conference rooms. Have you ever been in the physical space?
Never been in the physical space, unfortunately. Okay.
So there were off of that main room, I have no idea. I'm assuming they're still there, but there were two kind of smaller rooms. And one of them was the computer, one was kind of like a little computer lab or the tech room. And one of them was a conference room, and they switched which was which, but one of them was just in really bad shape. The paint was peeling and everything. And there was no budget to paint it, because doing anything through physical plant is much more expensive, it makes sense why that is. But it'd be like thousands of dollars to paint this small room. And so the powers that be were like, we can't do it, but what we can do is buy a couple gallons of paint and give some people permission to come in over the weekend, and you know, whatever happens, happens. Yeah. So we stealthily painting a conference room, which was just like, yeah, all right, I like this. This is mm-hmm. fun. I'm yeah. like, you know, helping redecorate. But yeah, that's the only things. I mean, you know, I had so many good conversations with the people that I worked with, and like, but I can't remember. I just remember kind of the good feelings of like having somebody, you know, knowing that a grad student I've been working with for over a year was finally turning in their dissertation or something, you know, something like that. Like, but I don't have a good story about that, but that happened so many times, things. Mm-hmm. And there's somebody coming back and saying that they got a good grade on this paper that they, you know, that they were really worried about, or, you know, things like that happened a lot, but
Mm-hmm. No, that's awesome. So you were there from 2000 through 2008, right?
Yeah.
Pretty tumultuous time in the world.
Yeah.
So how did the Writing Center affect that in any way, or help you process that?
So, help me process, particularly for 9/11, I was at the Writing Center when we became aware that something was happening. I was at my desk. I was a supervisor at that point. So I had a desk, that was mine, and a computer that was mine. And I was there and I was watching like on the computer as everything was happening and kind of like processing and figuring it out. And everybody, you know, people were showing up for work and clients were coming in. And everybody was kind of just in a really weird space. And I know at some point there was a fairly small TV that we had, and a cable drop for some reason in the main center. And so somebody put, you know, found it and pulled it out and, set it up in like the main space and turned it on to the news. And it was just on, and people were kind of like crowded around it or just like watching it. It was kind of like this, and we were still consulting. It wasn't very crowded, but we were still working with people. And I remember one of the other grad students, we just had it on. And I remember one of the other grad students at some point, and I think this was the same day, showed up for work and like basically said, we should turn this off. Like this is not, this is potentially traumatic. Mm-hmm. This should be a place where people don't have to be faced with that. Given the work that we're doing, this should be a place where, and they were absolutely right. And I was really grateful. I mean, cause in that moment, like none of us were thinking in that way. Like we were all kind of thinking and just like, oh, what's going on? We want to know what's going on. And there was, you know, thankfully, one of our colleagues was like, who had had a history of trauma and understood what would be better in the long run. You know, if we could create a space where that we weren't, you know, just a place where people could be away from that. And also, this is not contributing to our work. Like, this is not good. And so that was then what we tried to do. Tried to be, you know, a place where we weren't going to be focused on that. It wasn't going to be kind of, you know, all the TVs were on and stuff. I remember that. I remember that very much because that was kind of my first like awareness of the impact of that kind of ever-present imagery that it could have, and just like how it wasn't just information. It was, you know, trauma, and it could actually hurt someone to have that, to have them walk into the center and be faced with that. And that was a useful realization for me. I'm trying to think if there was, I know I had conversations with students of color and international students who worked in the Writing Center or who were our clients who did not come into work that week, who were worried for their safety or worried for their family, you know, just worried about just the world and whether or not they were safe in it. But I don't remember any kind of like larger, I know we were, you know, as supportive as we could be, without training, and just, you know, like, you're safe here, we'll help you, you know, what do you need, kind of things. But in terms of kind of a larger policy, I'm not aware of anything that was going on, like, formally. But I did know that we definitely wanted, after that point, even before that point, but we were trying to be actively a place where people knew they could come.
Right.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Mm. Yeah, definitely. The final sort of question in this section is like how the center was perceived by, like, faculty in the community at large, or sort of the larger field. Do you have a sense of that?
A little bit. I mean, so I believe my perception of how faculty thought of us would be either they were just really supportive and they told all their students, just go to the Writing Center, or they were sort of supportive, but they were annoyed when the writing got turned in and wasn't perfect. And we would get, like, you know, well, they said they went to the Writing Center, it's not perfect. It's like, yeah, correct. And and so that was, there was always that kind of disconnect between, like, it's like, you didn't fix it. It's like, no, not our job.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So there was kind of that, but there were a lot of faculty who were very supportive, who understood what we were doing and were fine with that. I would say staff, same, you know, I'm not really aware of that, but community and larger field. I mean, the student body, we always had more demand than we could fill. I mean, there were, you know, the Writing Center was really popular with people who came. Like, if there were very few people, I think, who, and we did this, we ran these numbers once. There were very few people who came one time and didn't come back. So, like, you know, for an appointment. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, that lends itself to a positive, positive interpretation. Mm-hmm. I would say the larger field, I feel like we were a decently respected, voice. Like we presented at conferences, people had heard of us, heard of the writing, the MSU Writing Center, mostly because of its size. Like the staff and the different and the satellites and the mm-hmm. the offerings that we were able to give, like they'd heard of that. We would, you know, a lot of places that we would talk to or collaborate with or meet at conferences, they were coming from much smaller locations. Mm-hmm. We were very fortunate in that way. Mm-hmm. And the university, I think, looked at us as a place, as a non-degree granting academic unit that they could cut whenever possible. Mm-hmm. I was like, you're not bringing in tuition dollars. We would like you to be smaller now.
That the neoliberal university is alive and well. Mm-hmm. just on the question of size, do you remember about how big the Writing Center was?
That's a really good question. No. Although I wonder, I have that. I don't remember. I would say, I wonder if I, because I had, I just found a, I bet I could find it some other time. I found a hard drive or an external hard drive that had some files on it from, like, 2006. That had some work files on it. And I was like, oh my God, this is like the scheduling, like how I do the scheduling kind of write up that I made. And it probably would say how many, but I would say probably 30 or so undergraduates and maybe a dozen grad students. That feels about right. That might be small. We had a decent sized staff. I mean, you know, there were, for our like in the main Writing Center, for our like heaviest scheduled hours, like the heaviest staffed hours, there could be like 12 people working, you know, undergrads and grads at any particular time. Mm-hmm. It was a pretty decent sized staff.
Yeah, I know, just from our like our Google Drive, 115 people have access to it. And I'm not sure if they all are currently working at the Writing Center, but I know we've got a like on our like Friday staff meetings, there'll be like 60, 65 people there. So it's a pretty sizable,
I mean, it was big. It was, we could all, you know what? Yeah. I feel like, cause I'm thinking of a Christmas party now when we would do, holiday party. Wasn't a Christmas party, explicitly not a Christmas party. We would do like white elephant gift exchange, and everybody who was in attendance was in the main center, and that room was full. So there were a lot of us there, and cause not everybody would come to the party. Yeah. There were a lot of us. I wish I knew, but yeah, it was a bunch of people. It was big.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So, I guess for the next question, you're in a sort of like perfect position to answer, since you taught the undergraduate course. You want to talk a little bit about the pedagogy of the Writing Center and the kind of key values that it had at the time?
So yeah, sure. The way it was explained to me, and I came to, you know, internalize and hopefully contribute to, was that our goal was to meet students where they are. And where and when we could be most useful is probably a better. So, and that was both like physically, like trying to be in the locations where we would be needed. So like, you know, in the library, in student athlete support services, in the dorms, in, you know, in Bessie at hours that would be, but also figuring out like, also like pedagogically. So to start from an assumption of like a non-directive practice, but to realize that our goal was to find like the places where we could provide the right, like the right question or the right suggestion or the right correction or the right resource that would help the writer to figure out to understand the tools they already had and implement them. So like it was a tightrope walk, right? Like it was, and this was one of the reasons why it was such a difficult thing. The class, it was such a difficult transition for the students who would come into the class, to 391 and believe that because they were good writers, they would automatically be good consultants. Mm-hmm. And would have to say like, actually it might be a hindrance, because if you are so skilled and if your identity is so, I'm a good writer, and looking at someone else's writing, it is really hard to not, to see the difference between what you would do and how to help them figure out what they will do. Right. Yeah. And so figuring like that moment of intervention and coming again from a non-directive place, like coming again from the, like, I'm not going to tell you. In most situations, I'm not going to start out by just telling you the answer. My goal is not to get this over faster. My goal is to figure out where I can be most useful, with the understanding that helping someone answer the questions they already know the answers to, and just helping them realize they already know the answers, is more useful than telling them the answer again.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We talk a lot about writer agency in the center. Is that something that was part of the practice at the time?
Not in that way. I don't think using that term, but it's a good description of what we were trying to do. Like to, for a lot of reasons, I mean, part of it was to protect the writings, like to protect our practice and our existence. We needed to not tell writers to do things that their faculty, their teachers would not want them to do. So like helping figure out, like, interrogating the assignment was a big thing. Like, okay, let's try to figure out what it is they're looking for by looking at the assignment and thinking about what they've told you. And then just, you know, that kind of thing. But that is a way of giving writers agency. And it's also a way of demonstrating the importance of audience and understanding what your audience is expecting. Yeah. And that was a big part of what we were doing. The other thing that was important to me when I started teaching the class was helping students have the future consultants have empathy for non-native speakers of English, for English language learners, and because that was something that we had to push back against, or that I had to push back against, this tendency to like, to focus on just lower order concerns, to focus on like punctuation in articles and things like that. And because there was this assumption like, okay, well, the English is wrong, so I'm going to fix the English. It's like, no, that's that, you know, there's no reason to do that. Like you can explain some rules and give some examples. And that's probably very useful. This person has learned English as a foreign language. They have a better understanding of the structure of this language than I do as a native speaker.
Yeah.
They could definitely have a more knowledgeable conversation about why it does what it does and why it fails to do what it's supposed to do than I could. But that we, you know, figuring out a way to instill that empathy and respect for someone who is writing a college level paper in a language that they've probably only like fairly recently in terms of the language acquisition have learned, right? Like, I mean, come on, like it's not something I could do. I would be, you know, so that was one of my goals for the class, because there were a lot of students who were not writing in their native language, or not writing in their home language for sure. Like not the one that they spoke most by preference and most comfortably.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wanted to make sure that the students who came through that class understood that, you know, that they were going to be working with people who were doing an incredibly hard thing.
Yeah.
And we're doing it amazingly well, even before our intervention. Right. And that also that there were potentially different ways to help someone who is writing in a language they have learned as a foreign language, rather than, you know, someone who is a native English speaker. Yeah. So that was one of my goals for the class. Yeah. I'm trying to think if there was other stuff that we... I know we wanted to like empower students to find answers. So we, you know, it was it was something that was said a lot, that, you know, it's not important to know all the answers. You just need to know where to find them.
Mm-hmm.
So we wanted consultants to model looking things up. Okay. We said like, we don't want you to pretend that you know, like definitely don't pretend that you know. But also like, don't be so sure that, you know, like it's okay to look things. We have this whole shelf of reference materials. Like it's okay if you're not quite sure, you know, what that kind of clause is called or something. You don't have to pretend that you know it. You can just go look it up. And modeling doing that, going to a resource and finding the answer is good for a lot of reasons.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like giving right. people the permission to not, I mean, imposter syndrome is real, right? Everybody, you know, nobody wants to to admit sometimes that they don't know something. Oh, sorry about that. No worries. I didn't turn my phone off.
no problem at all.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, that's a sort of interesting, like, form of vulnerability in a lot of ways. Like, yeah. And it's something that, you know, as you say, right, it's not something that comes naturally in the academy, or is certainly not a behavior that's encouraged in the rest of the academy. Right.
Yeah. Well, and I feel like I had a fortunate experience that I did most of my PhD in rhetoric and writing at a point where, you know, the faculty I was interacting with, for the most part, did not expect that. We're like, we don't need to be pompous about any of this. Like we are trying to figure out how, you know, like how to teach writing and how rhetoric works. Let's not also be annoying to be around. And that was really nice. Like it was really nice to be like, okay, you know, yeah, we are in this together. Which was a really nice thing
Yeah. Oh, that's incredible. Yeah.
Yeah.
So the next question is sort of like, and we've sort of already talked about some of the tensions that existed, but sure. Any kind of like, any sorts of tensions that existed either within the center itself or between the center and sort of other aspects of the university or just in general?
Well, there was always the budgeting thing. I know that there were a couple of points and I knew about some of this because of my proximity to, but I was part of the administration at one point, but earlier than that, I worked with the director pretty closely to help with things. So I heard about these things, but I know that there were points where we needed to cut. They were just over like drastic cuts, and there were always kind of the threat of cuts because we didn't bring money in. And we were always, I was always like pulling numbers and doing counts of like our usage and like, you know, okay, here are all the appointment slots we offered. Here are all the appointment slots that were full. And I was doing this with like paper, like, you know, like binders of appointment books and like flipping through them and counting them. And like, before it was all digital. And so there was always this pressure. We need to have numbers to show our impact. And that was tense. You know, cause you know, I was on assistantship, you know, and I felt like, and all of us were, or in the undergrads were on hourly, and, you know, people were counting on that money. I know I was. And there were points when I went and got like an additional assistantship in other like teaching first year writing, because the Writing Center, like just because I could, because that was available to me, and the Writing Center needed, you know, to maintain other people. And I had this other opportunity. So like I went down. I would say other like individual tensions. Labor practices weren't the best. Mm. this was something that I was also there. Speaking of milestones, related milestones, when the GEU came into being. I was the Writing Center's steward in the initial, like, we're trying to make a union conversations. And then the Writing Center consultants got negotiated out of the bargaining unit, which was a super bummer. I was angry because they didn't tell me. And I'm like, I'm the steward. Wait, no, a call. I could have gotten a call. Right. But so I'm trying to use my words carefully, because not because none of these people can hurt me. But because I'm trying to be fair, because my perceptions at the time were that things were mostly okay. But looking back on it, I think it is the role of administration, and this would have been in the Patty Stock, Janet Swenson era, to make sure that if you have people who are working for you for X amount of time, that the work you're giving them can take place in that amount of time. Mm-hmm. And I think the expectations were not reasonable, and there was a lot of using like enthusiasm to encourage people to go over, you know, like, and so this is one of the bad sides potentially of having such a supportive and community, is that you don't always notice when someone's asking you to do more than you really should.
Right.
And so now looking back on it, like, oh yeah, that wasn't okay. Like, that's, you know, that was, you know, I was working more than I was getting paid for, and that, you know, and that is not okay. Yeah. But so that is a valuable lesson. Great. It's a good lesson to have, but and some of this was happening before the union existed as well. Mm-hmm. So
Yeah. Well, I'm definitely glad that you guys formed the union. I'm actually a steward for the history department. So
hey, great.
So I'm really thankful that groundwork that you all laid. We're still going strong. And membership is struggling a little bit. Like, our membership numbers are struggling a little bit right now with COVID.
Because of the Michigan law. Well, the COVID, but also the making it voluntary to pay dues. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm a current union member. I'm a lecturer at U of M. So the lecturer employees union. It's the same thing here. It's hard. But hopefully it's definitely better. And I think, you know, I think that given, you know, when everything comes back to normal, that I mean everything is better with the union. The grad student, you know, in particular, conditions there are much better, I think, with it.
Oh yeah, no doubt about it. Yeah, I mean, we still are not technically paid a living wage, but we are with a 9 month employment at like at the level one, we're at 87% of a living wage.
It's better than it was.
Better than it was.
climbing the ladder. Yeah. No, I know. It's yeah. Yeah. It's very important. And yeah, I'm glad it happened there. I'm glad it exists here. For me and for the grad students, thankfully, at U of M. Yeah, it's are the graduate writing consultants in the Writing Center, are they part of the bargaining unit yet, or are they're excluded still?
They're excluded still, yeah. So they are, and then RAs are still excluded. The good thing about RAs is that and this I don't think is the case for the consultants, but RAs go off of our contract more or less, so good. They get similar wages and they get the same healthcare program.
I think that's the same thing for the consultants as well. I mean, I think that it's a bummer that the language was written in that particular way, and I have speculation about why it was, but I have no real information. But just I remember it being defined as like graduate employees whose primary duty is teaching. And there was this long conversation about what is consulting. Is it teaching? Well, it's not research. Right. So, you know, like it's not, but it's not, it's explicitly not teaching. So yeah, I wish they were part of the union. I mean, I think they get all the benefits of it because you really can't get anyone to work for you if you don't have the same, like the salary is the same and all of the health insurance and all those benefits. But it should be, they should have a voice.
Yeah,
it's too bad.
For sure. Yeah. Yeah. But no, I'm definitely, it's definitely great to be in the presence of someone who's like,
I cannot take credit. It was not my idea. I was on board as soon as my parents are public school teachers. Retired. So they're big fans of unions and union protection. And I have a nice photograph of my father being arrested, on the picket line when he was like picketing with me and, you know, okay. So big fan, but I was not one of the primary organizers, but I definitely wanted to help because it was something that, you know,
That's
very important work, and I'm glad it's still going strong.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So on maybe a sort of less sort of related, do you remember any of the sort of like how like interdisciplinary the consultants were, like where were most people from on campus?
It was honestly mostly from the liberal arts. I know most of the people who could get credit for taking the consultant course were in English, and most people who were interested in taking the class were interested in writing and there, you know, so there wasn't a very wide spread there. I mean, we had, you know, some foreign languages, you know, some like people from modern languages, but it was all in the very rarely in the science side of things. Grad student, we tried to recruit. I mean, there, you know, we would try to, you know, ask faculty. I know the directors would ask faculty to recommend students. We would try to recruit from them, but it's a hard sell if we say, you know, you're an undergrad, please take this class. And they're like, well, I can't, like, it doesn't count towards my degree. So, you know, and some people did, but for the most part, it was a pretty hard sell. Grad students, my understanding of the deal there was that there were agreements with a number of departments or programs to provide a certain percentage of grad student, some of the grad student slots at the Writing Center were funded by these programs. And so we had to take a certain number of their students. And there was from rhetoric and writing, and I think from the English department. What was the American, I can't remember, it doesn't exist anymore. There were a couple of programs that we would get students, get grad students from there. And then other people were recruited. We would encounter them. But it was not a very diverse group. it was not a very diverse group ethnically, culturally, or in terms of the programs they were in. It was mostly white. I would say probably 60-40 women to men. And the most people were in some like liberal arts program, I think. There was always kind of this, or not always, but there was often this push to or awareness of the value of like, it would be better if our consultant staff better reflected the demographics of the university in terms of the things that are being studied, in terms of certainly ethnically and just, you know, and culturally. And I don't really know what was being attempted to make that happen. I know it was not profoundly successful, unfortunately, at the time.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So you've talked a lot about this, the undergraduate course, which I think is wonderful. There is a full question about it here, about the design of this course. I guess I'll just open it up to you if you want to say anything more about the class itself.
Let me think. Let me look in the notes that I jotted down. I think I covered it. Just that we wanted, that the undergrads that we hired mostly came from that class, unless they had like a lot of experience somewhere else, which was really rare. I think we had somebody who came from the Lansing Community College Writing Center and had experience working there. And so they just kind of walked right in because that was run by a former GWC. But for the class, I think I covered it, just that it was important. It was important to that they needed to value the expertise of the writers they were working with. They weren't there to be, you know, sage on the stage. They were there to be someone who could help that person figure out their answer to that question, you know, to figure out their way of responding to the assignment, which was a hard thing. And it was not enough to be a good writer.
Mm-hmm.
Because almost everybody in that class just self-identified as a good writer. And I actually had an assignment that I created, I think my second semester teaching it, which would have been my second year teaching it because it was only in the spring, that was in just like fully intended to fuck with them. And it was, I called it a Manchester essay, and introduced it as, okay, we're going to learn, you know, we've been talking about genre. We're going to learn this particular genre. I'm going to ask you to write, in it. And I just made up, and I think I sold it like to the first group. The next one's coming through. Probably somebody had spoiled it for them, but, it was just these completely arbitrary rules. Like you could only use words of three syllables or less, or two syllables or less. If you wanted a word that was more than two syllables, it had to be on the odd page in the dictionary, and you could only use the dictionary that was closest to you. Like it just had, you know, and you could either write about, I forget what, it was like a complex, like a complex topic, like an interesting topic, like probably something about politics or ducks. And everybody chose to write about ducks. They had to write an essay because it's, you know, ducks is a one syllable word, and it's a lot easier to make it work. But I had all of these rules. And then we had like a debriefing conversation after they had that, you know, I gave them a timed writing. And after they had that, we had a conversation about, it's like, okay, you realize why I'm asking you to do this. Like, I just asked, you know, to try to adhere to this form that makes no sense to you, that has seemingly arbitrary rules. How easy was it for you to do your best work in this situation, right? Like how easy was it for you to sound the way you're used to sounding when you're writing? And, you know, if I'd let you talk to me about this topic, do you think you would have been more impressive? Like, and so we were able to have a really cool, really cool conversations about that. And it was a really nice way of like that empathy building that we were talking about before. Mm-hmm. It was a fun class, but yeah. And I got to, kind of be responsive to the things that we saw, like, you know, if we had, like new things coming up that we noticed over the course of a year, then I could build that into the class, or we could focus more on, you know, like new media stuff. Like, how do you, you know, what if we're, cause that was something that was coming up in the time that I was there, more people doing things that incorporated, I mean, at the time, images, ooh, images. But you know, like, right. to say, like eventually videos and things, and we eventually had resources to do that. And so how do we give feedback on that? What does it mean to take a, like an audience centered, non-directive approach at helping someone who has to make a movie for their first year writing class? You know, like it was pretty mm-hmm. cool.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that sounds awesome. All right. By the way, we are at 2 o'clock, and I want to be respectful of your time.
I'm good.
Okay, good. Yeah.
No classes on Fridays for me.
Well, that's good. Yeah. I was teaching this morning. Yeah. And then my students have a paper deadline today, actually, but I've been pretty lax with like giving extensions and stuff because.
Oh yeah. Know. No, time has no meaning during COVID. I have told all of my students, no, extension absolutely granted. Just tell me you need it. Yep. Tell me when you want to turn it in. I want to read your best work read the best work you're capable of. Like, and I've told them all that, you know, they're like, right. Can I have an extra couple hours on this assignment? I'm like, okay, the last moment I can accept work is the last day of classes. Pick a date and time before that and tell me mm-hmm. when you'll have this done. I don't particularly care. Just like, right. tell me, you can have, you know, they'll say, can I have until midnight? I'm like, you can have until Tuesday. I don't care. Just tell me how much time you need. Yep, they're all struggling, yeah. you know, to mm-hmm. get things done. It's like, no, I don't, yeah. I have to read it regardless. Please let it be the best possible version
exactly.
of what it is yeah. you're capable of. Yeah.
Just seems like there a lot of students are just so like they just seem so cut off from their social world.
Oh yeah.
Like it's just so like we forget how like all of those little conversations that people have as they're leaving class, like, do you want to meet in the library after this?
Yes. Like, well, no, like but like, also this is one of the things that so at the beginning of last semester. So with students who had gone through like a few weeks of or like a month of online, you know, already, and we're starting up in fall. I asked them, and most of my classes are co-taught with engineering faculty, with like engineers. But this is a class that I teach solo. And I asked them, like, okay, what can I do? Like, what, you know, you've got a little bit of an understanding now of what's hard about this. Is there anything that you can think of now that I could do to make this class go more smoothly? You know, what can I do from my side? And one of the students said, can you send us a weekly reminder of what's going on in class this week? Mm. And like, you know, what's due, what we're doing, what, you know, what's happening. And I had this moment where my initial reaction was, no, I'm not going to send you, like, come on now. Like, what? And then I realized, oh God, I really wish somebody would do that to me. Like, would just send me a weekly, just like, here's what you need to do this week, Stephanie. Like, here, this is what's happening. Because none of those time markers exist. Like none of the cues that I have for like what day it is. But also one of the things the student said in that moment was assignments in particular are so hard to keep track of because you're used to like, you get to class and somebody's like, hey, you finished that thing that's due Thursday yet? And they're like, oh, I haven't started yet, but then they have time. And how reliant they are on just those informal, or hearing people talking about an assignment when you're in a big lecture, like hearing people talking about it and being like, oh, that's right, I should start that. Mm-hmm. Right. And so many of them, many more of them are missing assignments because of that. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, I hadn't even thought of how valuable just that casual interaction in terms of keeping you on track and remembering mm-hmm. what's going on in the class is. Yeah, no, I have colleagues who are not being understanding in the same way. And I'm like, I don't know how you live with yourself. You're a bad person and you should feel bad. That is not okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And at the end of the day, like I have no desire to read someone's like terrible work or a work right. that isn't their best.
Right. Well, it's not representative. Like, being able to do your best work during a pandemic is not one of the outcomes of my class. Like, I'm not expecting everybody to deal with like global pandemic as part of, like, you don't need to show me that your approach to writing is robust to that. I'm okay with it not being the, you know, like the best thing you'd be capable of in a normal semester. So everybody gets some grace, right? Like, I don't need to see, because normally keeping track of things, you know, and being able to respond to an assignment as I've written it and, you know, like give me as the audience, what I'm expecting, what I have told you I'm expecting is part of what it is, part of one of the, one of the learning outcomes of my courses. Like, I want them to be able to interrogate the assignment, ask me questions they need answered, and deliver what I've said I want. Right. Sure. And, but like, you know, being able to do all of that and keep track of things when you can't go outside and you can't see anybody and you're worried about your family. Like, no. It's that we've gone past what I'm expecting my class to measure. It's like, no, everybody gets some grace. This is, yeah. Due dates have no meaning. Everybody's allowed to, I mean, I'm always okay with people asking me questions, but I told them, like, if you're stressing out about whether or not what you've written is good enough, just send it to me and say, hey, is this good enough? And I'll tell you. And if the answer is no, I'll give you 2 more weeks to work on. Like, don't spend time stressing about it. Mm-hmm. Send it to me and ask me. And that's not normally something I would offer.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, but it has been such a kind of, it's like, especially that first semester, I think a lot of students were just like, were just completely blindsided by the whole thing. And it was, I think now people are sort of starting to get used to it, but now we're on this sort of part where they're just so bored with it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no, I know. And I actually had because of the structure of my class, I actually had the last official class meeting with one of my classes yesterday. And one of the students, and as I was going around to their groups and breakout rooms and debriefing the assignment that we just finished and giving them kind of my, hey, you know, take care of yourselves. I hope, you know, you do well. One of them like gave me a direct message in Zoom and said that this was his last class at U of M. And I was like, oh man, like, you know, and I celebrated him in the message and, you know, congratulated him and stuff. But I'm just like, that is so hard. And I know like a lot of my students are fourth year, are graduating. And I'm just like, oh man, just, there are students who like did their entire final year of college in their dorm or at home. And it's just, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I feel bad for them. I don't understand not feeling bad for them. And like, there are some people I just want to shake. It's like, come on. Like, come on.
I remember like, I've got, so I've been here for 4 years now. And so like my very first group of students that I ever worked with are starting to graduate. And like, they're like, some of them that I kept in touch with were like applying to graduate school. And then like the grad program said, actually, we're not admitting students this year. So wait till next year and stuff like that. Yeah. And then like, they're going into an even worse job market than like, I mean, I graduated college in 2013 and I thought I was going into a terrible job market, you know?
Yeah.
And I just can't even conceive of what students are facing down right now.
These are history students?
I TA for the kind of big general classes that are required for everyone. We call them integrative arts and humanities. I don't know if that was there before, but so those are still around. And like my class this semester has 400 students and I'm one of 6 TAs. So it's just like industrial education. And it's it's just so difficult for them. And like, I feel like MSU has enough money to throw around that like we don't have to do it this way, but
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, no, I agree. Yeah, it's my, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Hard.
Yeah, it's definitely a tough time for many of them. And I just wish like, I don't know, it was just sort of like I think it's, you know, especially in the sort of like academic spaces, it's pretty commonplace to sort of down punch at undergrads is like, like, oh God, they're so dumb. They're so like bothersome, especially at like a research university where like people think it's like teaching is this kind of secondary job or something.
Yeah. That's one of the things I really like about U of M is that there are a lot of lecturers, and lecturers are in a lot of cases permanent non-tenure stream faculty. So we're teaching faculty, and there isn't kind of that. There are professors. there are professors who see, you know, having to teach classes as standing between them and their real job, which is research and grants and stuff, right? But lecturers don't have that. We're just, you know, our job is teaching. There are still lecturers who hate the students. That's an issue that they need to deal with in terms of how they're spending their very valuable one life that they get. but I remember some classes that I took in the English language and lit program for my master's. I just remember sitting in those classes like, why are you doing this? Just looking at the professor who obviously hated us, hated being there, did not want, I was just like, why? What is the, like, why? There has to be something else you could be doing with your time. I don't understand it. That is one of the things to bring it back to the Writing Center. It is really hard. Like, we were colleagues. Grad students and undergrads in that space were colleagues, right? And like, I'm not going to say there was no division. There were sometimes divisions, but those people didn't stick around, because if you couldn't get on board with the idea that, no, you might be asked to mentor an undergrad, but an undergrad also might be asked to mentor you, depending on like what it is you need to learn, right? Like, so if you couldn't get on board with that perspective, you weren't going to be comfortable in the Writing Center for a lot of reasons. Mm-hmm. And that was, I think, very valuable, because it was like, you know, these are adults. Mm-hmm. These are adults. Like, you shouldn't date them, but you know, thank you, orientation. That's the one thing I learned. But these are adults. There's no you don't have to, you know, you can exist in the world as a valuable individual without crapping on other people who are in some way, according to you, less than, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that was really cool to have that united front in that way.
Yeah. And that's, I mean, at least from my experience, that's still here.
That's like, good.
That, you know, like, I mean, we have to go through a sort of like observation period, and or like a period where we go around and observe people. And I remember, I mean, I only observed undergraduates in their consultations.
Yeah.
And I was like, man, like, this is incredible. Like, you know, I wish I was like this in undergrad. You know?
It's great. It's great. I remember doing that. I'm glad they're still doing that. And I can't imagine, like, Trixie's fantastic. I mean, I only worked with her for a short amount of time, but I was really impressed. And I can't imagine that she would have. I felt like when I left, she's going to maintain all the stuff that's working, and she's going to shake the Etch-a-Sketch, and anything that's not working, she's going to figure out a new way to do it. So I'm not surprised that the culture is as good or better. It's wonderful.
It's been a really incredible experience. I mean, I think everybody knows that grad school is kind of a pressure cooker, but you know,
it's hot garbage.
But it's always just like, you know, it's like I don't think I've ever been anywhere else where I look forward to going to meetings. But like, you see people and like, they're, you know, like the meetings are actually some, like, it's not a like meeting about scheduling another meeting, you know, it's like something constructive and something nice, you know?
Yeah. No, yeah. You found a good place. You found a good place to land. The Writing Center is it's a sweet gig. At least it was when I was there. I mean, it wasn't perfect, but it was, it was a really nice place to work for sure.
And I guess to sort of like bring it back to some of the questions here, one of the things that really fascinated me when I came here is that there's like this we have this handbook, and most places they have a handbook and it's like, here are your rights and responsibilities, and sort of tell you all this stuff, but we have this like beautiful ornate handbook now that has like all, like, it's got like links to resources, it's like, and it's kind of like a living document with like, you know, people are always adding to it and like always updating it and stuff like that. So I was wondering if there was something like that, like a handbook or a sort of guidebook like that when you were there.
not, I feel like we started to build something like that with the wiki. But wikis became popular while I worked there. I don't remember. So when I started, I got a copy of the Bedford Guide for Writing Tutors. That was not a, you know, that was just a theory thing. I don't think that existed mm-hmm. when I worked there. It was more, here are some articles, like you're going to read The Idea of a Writing Center and Revisiting the Idea of a Writing Center, and you're going to, you know, read kind of these fundamental texts, but not, I want to see it. I want to see that handbook now. Yeah, I don't think we had something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you tell me maybe more about this wiki then?
I know we were trying to have, what do we have on it? We started one, and I think we had resources. We were trying to create like it as an external facing resource that we could create. I can't remember what kind of things we were putting. I remember there was a session that I was helping run for people to teach people what the wiki was and how not to break it, like how not to accidentally break it, because we didn't have like robust undo at the time. But I don't really remember what the goals were for it, other than to have a way of kind of capturing all the different expertise that we seem to have. We had, you know, just like people who were doing different things, and having a way to like create resources that we could then put out to the community if we needed to. Yeah, no, I don't remember much more about it. Sorry. I wish I did.
No, that's okay. Yeah.
I hadn't thought about it until we were talking. Like I hadn't even remembered it.
Yeah. So you mentioned that there were like some sort of central text that people read as part of like a training process or the onboarding process, yeah. I suppose.
There were a couple of them, and they're all in my office on campus, which I've been to like 3 times in the past year and a half. Mm. I should have looked at the picture. I did. I took a picture of my bookshelves. I should have looked it up. I know that the Bedford St. Martin's Guide for Writing Center Tutors was one of them. And there was a white book with, I believe, blue lettering. Was the Allen and Bacon Guide to Peer Tutoring? That feels right. I still have the books, and they're on my shelf with all the other stuff that I accumulated. But it was, I think there were these books that were kind of like, here, you should read this. Like here's going to be, and we always got, had like a grammar, mechanics, and syntax handbook, like a tabbed, it wasn't the same one every year, but we had like, you know, something that we could kind of become familiar with. And then if we needed to look something up, everybody got one of those, or at least at some point we got those. But these were more like, I'm trying to remember some of that was like a mix of practical tips and somewhat foundational theory, some writing on writing centers and just kind of reference points that people would have, like Stephen North, and things like that. I don't really remember using it that much, honestly. Mm. I'm sure I read them, but it was more, my learning what we were doing and figuring out what was going on was really more working with writers and observing people in the center and that sort of thing. I mm-hmm. I don't remember like having to use that information in a direct way.
Mm-hmm. Oh, interesting. Okay. Yeah. I think you already mentioned about sort of the general like funding question, about how there were some tensions and difficulties around there. So I guess we can probably move on to this final set of questions. So now that like you've moved on, you've been away from the center for quite some time, is there any advice you'd provide to yourself now, if you could go back and tell yourself something?
On the whole, I'm happy about the experience. I think it was very valuable, and I got a lot of value out of it. I would say probably, you know, track your work hours a little bit better. Because I was on a 3/4 time assistantship for a lot of that. And just, you know, keep track and object a little bit more. I think probably I think that's probably about it. I think it was a pretty positive experience. I mean, there are things that I wish we would have been more on top of. Like, I feel like we could have done better outreach to different communities in terms of being a safe space for marginalized groups. I think we could have been more explicitly that.
Mm-hmm.
But that is looking back on it, and you know, my from my perspective as at the time a 20-year-old, you know, straight cisgendered woman, white woman, I was not as aware of that need as I should have been. So you know, I wish going back, there were definitely opportunities. The Writing Center could have been a much more valuable place in that way, and I suspect is more of that now. But other than that, I think, and the you know, don't light yourself on fire to keep other people warm kind of advice, which I definitely did, and it is not good, especially as a graduate student where mental health is already just a very thin thread. Yeah, no, I think that would be all I would go for there. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I find like this is always a difficult question to answer because a lot of the stuff I would have rather figured out the hard way, you know.
Yeah. Or
it did me a lot of good to figure out stuff the hard way. And
right.
You know, I probably wouldn't want to go back and shortcut.
Mm-hmm. Like I'm happy where I landed, right? So I don't want to, you know, it's you don't want to go back in time and change things and accidentally mess up the path, right?
Yeah.
But I feel like they're, you know, given the resources we had, given the space and the contact with the different, you know, areas of the university, I feel like we could have done more in those in some ways. But that would probably be the only thing that I would think.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, you've shared so much like really awesome stuff already. Is there anything else maybe that you'd love to talk about here?
I'm going to go back and look at my notes. I'm going to see if there's anything that we didn't cover. I think, okay. We talked about that. Let me see. I'm scanning. I'm scanning all of the bullets that I added to the, I don't think we talked about, I know the outreach. I know we were involved with, we did the resource fair, the AOP resource fair every year, but we also were trying to help DeWitt High School start a writing center at their high school. And I went out and met with somebody there and met with a lot of students there and like helped talk to them about that. It was an attempt to try to kind of like get a pipeline almost from DeWitt, but also to help them do that. And we had faculty interest. I don't know if they, what came of that, but that was something should be recorded. It should be noted. Cause it was I don't know. It felt really good to have, like, there was a high school who like, and a high school teacher was like, I want my students doing this at, you know, in high school. I want them to understand like this approach is really valuable. And I want them to have this kind of broader understanding. I'm like, yeah, man, that would be, I would have loved that. If I'd had that in high school, would have been really helpful. I think that's everything. That's everything.
Well, I mean, thank you so much for your, first of all, for like recalling all of this stuff, but also for like your contribution.
Thanks.
You know, the Writing Center is like a great place because like people like you work there, and
that's very sweet.
Made it the place that it is. So
we have really no way of knowing that. It could have been much worse. It could have been if I hadn't been there, it could have been much better. We have no way of knowing.
that is true.
I can tell you that one of my closest friends now who I met at the Writing Center when she first met me, she was scared of me. So I have a feeling that I might have inadvertently terrorized some of the consultants there. Who have you already talked to? Have you talked to any?
We have
a lot of people.
We have a list. Yeah. So I don't know if we've spoken to a lot of people, but we've definitely got a pretty large list. Let me see.
Can I check it for some names? Because I have a couple people that I thought would be pretty good sources for you of information you're not likely to get other places.
Yeah, let me, I can pull up the list of people here that we're going to be interviewing. I have to. Yeah, so I can, I'm not sure if I'm actually not the owner of the document, even though.
Oh, you don't need to share it with me. That's okay.
So we have about 45 people on this list that we're going to be talking to. So yeah, if you want to name.
I was going to check them. Do you have Kathy Fleck on that list? Fleck, FLECK.
Do a. No, we don't. Okay.
So Kathy was a grad student when I started, and I think she was assistant director early on. She was there when I started. She's one of the only people that I can think of who wasn't in administration who was employed at the Writing Center when I started. So some of the earlier stuff she would probably be a really good source for from a grad student perspective. Pretty sure she lives in Puerto Rico now. I just Googled her name, and I think, this is her email address. I have not had contact with her in forever. She and I are not friends, but I have, she was great. And I think she would be able to tell you some stuff. Also, let me see if I can find, so the undergrad who ran the CEEWC Writing Center while he was there, his name was Chris Evans, not that Chris Evans. Do you have him on your list?
No.
Okay. Let me see if I can find him. When I remembered his name, I Googled him and he was on LinkedIn. If you decide you want to talk to him, I think you could find him. He is linked to the MSU Writing Center on LinkedIn. So you could probably find him that way. But he created and sustained and worked at the engineering satellite that was really popular, but it wasn't sustainable. He was an engineering undergrad consultant. So talking to someone about how he was recruited and why he was there, that might be an interesting thing to add to this. Let me see. Oh, wait, I might've found him. Did I find him? I found him. Okay, hold on. I can send you his LinkedIn profile. I don't have his email address. The other people that I can put you in contact with if you're interested are the two people that I work with currently, and also Mike McLeod. Is Mike McLeod on your list?
Let me check here real quick. No, we don't have Mike McLeod either.
Okay. What about, can I check a couple other names and then I'll just send you all their contact information. Pavlov, Amy Pavlov. It's either going to be Pavlov or Pawlow, depending on how old the information is.
No, we don't have that either.
And then Robin, the first name is Robin. Her surname now is Fowler. At the time, it could have been Roots or Pulford. I'm going to get their info. If you decide you want different perspectives, I know, so all of them were graduate writing consultants at different points. I believe Robin was also an undergraduate writing consultant for her last year of her undergrad. that roots are there is Robin. Fowler, that's her name. And then Amy Pavlov was a graduate writing consultant for a few years. And they would have different perspectives for sure on that. And then Mike McLeod, I know, was recruited and brought in specifically because he had coding experience. He was brought in to help get the Writing Center online, basically.
Yeah.
So he would probably have an interesting perspective on that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
These last three people are people I'm still friends with, but so I have told all of them that I was doing this and asked them if they would be okay with my passing along their contact information. So awesome. None of them are going to be surprised. Kathy okay. Fleck and Chris Evans will not remember me, will probably be shocked, but I'm sure would have useful information.
Yeah, thank you so much.
No problem.
Yeah, it's incredible. Yeah, and yeah, none of them are on the list. So awesome. Okay.
Awesome.
I think we can wrap up. So I mean, thank you so much for coming in and
that was my pleasure
today. It's yeah, it was, I mean, so revelatory for how the center came to be. So
awesome.
Yeah.
Well, thank you. I really enjoyed it. It was nice to think back on some of that.
Yeah, yeah. So I think the next steps will be I've got to put the transcript and stuff through this program called Otter AI. Okay. I'm not really sure how it works, what it does. But I know it's going to, and then I have to go through and sort of like edit the transcript and whatever, you know, and then sure. I'll send that to you with the IRB consent form. And then whatever, if there's stuff that you don't want in there, if there's stuff that you think afterwards that you'd like to have added in,
okay.
that's completely within your right to do. So.
Okay. All right. That sounds great.
And so I'll be in touch and thank you again so much.
It was my pleasure. All right. Yeah. Bye.
Bye.